This morning we speak with Dr. Hill Marvel Tabokanon, one of the panel speakers for the upcoming climate change panel, which is part of the performance work Disaffected, which is about the vulnerability of our planet. Good morning, Dr. Hill.
Yes, good morning.
First, tell us how you got involved and chosen to be one of the panelists for the climate change panel.
I actually don't know. I received an invitation from Maria from Blacktown, but actually I did my doctorate at Macquarie University and completed my PhD in 2014. I studied environmental migrations in the Pacific. I studied islanders who are affected by climate change and other environmental factors.
So this will be your topic at the panel?
This will be a topic, yeah. And they sort of wanted me to focus a little bit on the Philippines, although they told me I'm at liberty to talk about my research in the Pacific.
Specifically for the Philippines, because you have first-hand experience during the Typhoon Haiyan?
Yes and no. My house, because I live in Leyte, I live in Ormoc City. So after Tacloban City, Ormoc City is one of the worst affected areas of Haiyan. I have a house there and it was severely affected. I was already here in Australia, but our house was badly damaged. And it might interest you to know that our house, being situated on a higher ground, became a refuge for several families prior to the typhoon. And because it's made of strong materials, it was able to protect quite a few families, yeah.
After the Typhoon Haiyan, did you go home to check your place?
Yes, I did. We fixed the roof. We fixed many things there. It was badly damaged.
And this was included in your thesis, Environmental Migration and Other Forced Migrations in the Pacific.
This was included not squarely.
Yeah, as an inspiration.
As an inspiration, yes. Because I basically studied the Rumbi people who were relocated from the Gilbert Islands to Fiji because of mining. But yes, Philippines was mentioned there.
Can you tell us about more of your thesis? Because I know that you'll be speaking about this on the panel.
Yes. What I tried to prove in my thesis was, because when we think of migration, we usually think of labor migration. People move out in search for higher wages, like Filipinos going to Saudi Arabia or Hong Kong because there are higher wages. And the second category of migrants are what we call refugees. And these are people who are driven out of their homeland because of conflict. There's a war. Well, there's a third type of migrants who are driven out because of environmental causes, such as mining, such as atomic tests, and now the effects of climate change. So they are forced out, and some of these are driven out of their homes temporarily, like what happened to our home became a temporary refuge for people living by the rivers, while some people move out on a permanent basis. So I looked at the long-term effect of environmental migration and found out that it is necessary to retain our cultures, because when the islands become dangerous to live on, people are uprooted from their islands and they go elsewhere. And I found out that if people become uprooted from their home, their well-being is diminished.
So you're saying there's a change of attitude, in short?
Yes. And also these people experience discrimination in the area where they settled. So it's very important that we have laws, because these people are forced out of their homes. For example, if islanders are forced out of their homes because of climate change and they settle in another country, I think it's important because we don't have law now protecting these people. There is no legal definition of environmental migration, at least under the law. This is just a sociological definition. So I was arguing to adopt a legal definition in order to protect people who are driven out from their home because of climate change or environmental factors.
How high is the possibility of having this kind of law?
It's not very high, unless the government could really see that there are people, because it's very difficult to define environmental migrant, because some countries are saying that they are moving out of their home because of economic reasons. The distinction between a labor migrant and environmental migrant is a bit blurred. So we are arguing that it's necessary to clearly define who are environmental migrants in order to protect them. That is what I was trying to prove in my thesis. And if you go back to the history of Philippine migration, there were so many communities in the Philippines which actually moved out because of environmental factors.
Australia plays a big role in migration and also in protecting the environment. But what's the real role of Australia as a big brother down south in terms of looking after the environment?
Well, Australia has a very, very big role because the South Pacific is considered one of the most vulnerable regions in the world in terms of climate change. I have actually been to several atolls in the Pacific. I have been to Micronesia, and I have also been to Marshall Islands. I did some research on the Bikini Islanders. I went to Majuro for my research, and I found out that these islands are very, very flat. For example, in Marshall Islands, the highest elevation is only 4 meters, and that's the bridge. That's a bridge. So imagine if a tsunami or a sea level rise, what we call in the Pacific, a king tide will hit Majuro, the capital of Marshall Islands. Thousands of people will be inundated, will be flooded. Mm. So they are in a very, very, they have nowhere else to go. And Australia has, this is a part of my thesis, I argue that Australia has enough land for these little islands which are threatened by the effect of climate change.
But how does Australia's environmental outlook really impact the Pacific region, which, as you mentioned, includes the Marshall Islands and also the Philippines? Because I know Marshall Islands is one of the small countries which place is lower.
Yes, also the Gilbert Islands. Yes. So actually, there are several programs, and one of them is the possibility of offering jobs to Pacific Islanders here in Australia. And a friend of mine is doing her doctoral thesis on the seasonal workers program of Australia and New Zealand, wherein they specifically have a quota for Pacific Islanders to come to Australia and work. And this is one of the areas where Australia can actually help, because by allowing Pacific Islanders to work in the orchards, the orange plantations here in New South Wales and Victoria, the Pacific Islanders can actually remit back money back to their families, and they could get their children, and they could build bigger houses. But that's for the short term. The longer term is when the big things really come, that meaning the impact of climate change comes, Australia really needs to, for me, offer a place for them to permanently stay. That's the long and short of it, because the islands are very, very vulnerable to the impact of climate change.
Can we say that Australia is doing well in terms of these issues concerning the climate change?
Yes and no. Australia is doing well, but I think it can still do much, much, much better. It can do better than what it is doing now. Of course, in the Philippines, Australia gave a generous amount of donations to the victims of Typhoon Haiyan, both medical and monetary donations. We look at this more of a relief donations in the short term. I'm thinking along the lines of the possibility of allowing environmental migrants to come to Australia to resettle if and when the event, you know, the expected impact of climate change occurs.
This issue, as we know, does not only affect the Pacific Islands, it also affects Australia and the whole world.
It does. Actually, it's not just Australia, but New Zealand can also do much to help the vulnerable countries in the Pacific. I believe the Philippines and Indonesia can also, having much more land than many of the countries in the Pacific, can also help.
As a conclusion, we know all of this will be possible with the government's funding and with their laws and all partnership that they're doing. But how can ordinary people help in tackling climate change?
I think ordinary people can help by lobbying, by making their government conscious that climate change and the people affected by climate change, that climate change is real, and the people affected by climate change deserve our help. You know, government will, and this is just an opinion, governments will act if there is a critical mass of people who will force that government to take action. So the role of the people to demand action is very, very important for me, for the government to act.
So it's a consolidated effort of the whole world.
Yeah, yes. In fact, what will happen in Blacktown on 19th of March of this month is one such effort. It may be a small effort, but it is a significant effort to disseminate awareness and consciousness of this growing problem.
If we accept that climate change is real, then we can do something about it.
We can do something about it politically, economically, and we can also educate our children to be more responsible to take care of our environment.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hill Marvel Tabokanon.
You're welcome.